stand beside me. We're better as a unit. Ain't enough bullets in a gun to hit us all. What's up, everybody? So another episode of Code Switch Podcast. It's your boy Trevor Trev here with Emmanuel, or as I like to call him, Hollywood, the man, the myth, the legend. Hollywood, man, we were talking about the shirt you have on, Lady Rays. Do you want to maybe shout them out real quick?
Yeah, so back in Destin, there's this, what do you call it, culinary delights shop, bakery shop, really, Lady Rays. Yes. Culinary Delights. You can find that in Destin, Florida. My brother from another mother, Tim Vondell, he runs that along with his sister. They're great people, great food. It's not just a bakery. They do lunch as well. I think my favorite food item there is, I can't remember the name. I didn't look it up. But basically what it is a bowl of eggs, like sausage.
Nice.
I think something else in there too. It's more than that. Y'all, trust me, it's good. And I highly recommend you customize it with Brother Tim's pepper jelly. That jelly is delicious. I've never been a big pepper fan, actually, or a jelly fan for that matter. But that combination there is delicious. So you all go out and check out Lady Ray's Culinary Delights in Destin, Florida. If you ever find yourself down there, I know it's a vacation town. So a few of y'all will probably be down there next year at least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also know Tim, and I can also attest to just how good of a person he is. And I think we went to Crab Island 2 or 3 years ago. Didn't they bring some of their baked goods out on the boat? So, yes. Yeah. So I have also tried some of their food, and it is absolutely delicious. So fully aligned with Hollywood on that. If you guys are down there, go check them out. Real good people. Cool.
Hey,
Tori, all right.
Let me ask you something real quick. Is that the championship shirt that we had, or was that our like first season of a kickballer?
Oh man, you're taking it back. Whole Life Fitness. I don't remember honestly. So just to fill everybody in, me and Hollywood we are seasoned intramural players. We played different sports, but I think the sport we played the most is kickball. And so from the day that we met, I mean, we played kickball across like, what, four cities? We played in Mobile, Fort Walton, Destin, and then even way out in 38.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so like, I mean, we played in like multiple leagues together. And it took us many years, but we finally won a championship. So it's probably good I make this comment anyway, because I'm always drinking out of this cup when we're recording these episodes. So people are probably like, he's got that lime green cup. This is actually from the season that we won the championship, and they gave us these cups. So I treasure this cup because we went many years losing, having losing records, being parts of like, what would they call those teams, Hollywood, where you would join as a free agent team, I think.
So
a free agent team, guys, is where they take people that signed up by themselves, or maybe it's like two or three people by themselves, but you don't have enough people that you know in order to create a team, and you don't know one of the existing teams so you're not joining that. So they'll take a bunch of kind of like people and stitch them together, and you become like this free agent team. It's very hard to win when you're a free agent team, because you have teams that have been playing together for like 8-10 years. And I mean, they have like that sport down to a science. Like when it comes to that kickball stuff, like there is so much strategy involved. So we, very many years, we went just like losing records, losing. And finally it just kind of worked out, and we won a championship.
So I think we retired after awesome that year too.
I played a little bit longer.
Oh, okay.
I played a little bit longer in Pensacola. So when I moved to Pensacola, I played probably like two or three. Oh, we played one or two seasons together. Remember?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, time. Yes. Because then we got recruited to that other team.
Nope.
Yeah. So we played a little bit after that, but not long. And then we kind of hung it up. I was kind of the same way. I was like, I've already won the championship. Like. Go out while I'm on top, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey, so this episode, guys, we've been talking about how we were going to get into AI for a while. And we're finally going to start getting into AI. We'll talk about it even more from a technical perspective. But in this episode, we're going to focus on AI's impact on the job market, right? Specifically tech. But before we get into all that, Hollywood, you want to give a quick intro for anybody that might be listening for the first time?
Yeah. So been in the tech industry for about, give an exact number, or close to exact number, about 13 years. I've been a manager for at least 5 to 6 years. So I'm currently a senior engineering manager. We don't know how long that's going to last, but I'm currently a senior engineering manager. C#.net, I started out in NetSpace and then went over to front end, and now I'm a full stack developer as well. Still work on stuff on the side as well as being a manager. But yeah, in automotive technology space, definitely starting to really get my hands deeper and deeper into a lot of the AI stuff as well. You know, I don't want to lose my skills, and I also want to make sure that I'm gaining new skills and able to keep up. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Sweet. All right. Going into my background, Trevor Evans. So I have about a decade of experience, and similar to Hollywood, I am currently an engineering manager. It's funny listening to Hollywood make that comment. I have been recently going through some job changes myself, was an engineering manager, and then went back to an IC role, and now back in an engineering manager role. So yeah, that's kind of my experience going into technologies. Similar to Hollywood, .NET, C#, that's near and dear to my heart. Hollywood is actually my mentor, and he loves to downplay that. But I always got to give him props. Definitely taught me like the majority of what I know today. And a lot of the things that he taught me is kind of serves as a foundation for me growing in my career. Most recently, I've been heavy in TypeScript. So Next.js, React, Node.js. Express at my current job, although I feel like we should be doing Nest.js. So there's that. But yeah, kind of a little bit about my background. So sweet. All right. Let's dive on in. So AI's impact on jobs. Who's really at risk? So AI isn't just hype anymore. Stanford researchers are showing it's already reshaping jobs, but the story is more complicated than, quote, robots taking our work. Now, I'm going to stop there. Before we go any further, you guys know how I do it. You know where we have to set the foundation. It's always going to be in the word, right? So with that being said, let me pull up the scripture I have here. So for this episode, I wanted to read from John chapter 14. And then for you guys' reference, I want you guys to read verses 2 through 29. Okay. I'm not going to read all of those, but I think those are all verses that you guys should read to give you some context, right? This is taking place right before Jesus is taken off to be crucified, right? So he's kind of spending time with the disciples, and he knows, right, that like that time is coming. And the reason why I wanted to focus on this scripture, Hollywood, is because AI is kind of changing the environment a little bit, right? It's kind of shaking things up, or at least people feel that it's shaking things up. I would say it's shaking things up for sure. But the point I want to make is that we still can rely on Christ when there's uncertainty and when our environment changes. So that's kind of what I was thinking in verses 2 through 5. I'm not going to read all of those, but at least if I go to verse 5, one of his disciples, Thomas saith unto him, Lord, we know not whither thou goest, and how can we know the way? And then Jesus kind of gives them some game, gives them a little parable, mini parable, I would say. Skipping down to verses 26 through 27, Jesus says, but the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things and bring all things to your remembrance, whatsoever I have said unto you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. So that's kind of my advice to you guys, just kind of touching on those verses there. you know, in this season of uncertainty, when we're dealing with AI, the environment's changing. There, you know, technology is moving at such a rapid pace. I just want you guys to remember, like, we still can rely on Christ, and there's beauty in that, guys. So just continue to pray, continue to have faith, and continue to grind. You know what I'm saying? I mean, faith without works is dead. So I'm not saying that we just pray and we go to sleep, but I truly believe if, you know, we keep the faith, we continue to rely on God, and we continue to work hard and try to learn about AI, everything will be okay, guys. I'm telling you. Cool. So one more time, John 14, chapter 2 through 29 verse. Y'all go check that out. All right, sweet. Let's jump right in. So Stanford did a study, and the key points I'm going to break down here, Hollywood, number one, 16% job decline for 22 through 25-year-olds in industries like customer service and software development. Second bullet point, this is, might actually be a little surprising, more experienced workers are holding steady and potentially even seeing growth. And the third one, AI is cutting tasks, not necessarily wages. So it's not that you're seeing a whole lot of pay decreases, but rather, you know, some of those repetitive or easy to accomplish tasks are becoming more easily automated, right? So with those three bullet points, I kind of wanted to jump into some reflection and get your thoughts. Number one, do you think entry-level or junior engineers are in immediate danger of being phased out?
Yeah, I do. I actually think, I'm going to say, no, I always do this, right? But I'm going to say I do, but it's like there's kind of like two sides to this coin, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of depends on what the company is thinking. I think the maturity level of AI within a company, of matters. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I don't want to be doom and gloom, right? Because I think, just to be fully transparent, my belief is everybody's job's at risk. And I think that is actually a very safe way to think. And I may get to that at some point later in the episode. But I do think that they're at risk because what a lot of companies are, I'll say what some companies that I'm aware of, are asking of the more experienced and the more seasoned developers is to take advantage of these AI tools, and you right. mentioned before in a previous episode, 10x your work, right? So I work with some AI tools today, and what I found is that I actually write less code and deliver more work because AI can write it just so much faster than I can. And so when you look at it from an entry level standpoint, it is a lot of these companies want to move fast. They want to have this startup mentality. And unfortunately, a lot of companies don't want to invest in newer talent. Like when I was coming into the field, you know, hiring entry level was preferred more than experience. One, we're cheaper. Let's just go ahead and get to the money aspect of it, right? We're cheaper
right.
To hire. Right. But also too, as the field grows and a lot of things are new in this field, you know, React was new, Angular, all this stuff just coming up, right? You could kind of do a correlation between all the new things coming into the field with new people coming into the field as well. And so I think that not that the new stuff is not coming in as fast, you don't have to put in a lot of the work to adopt it anymore from an experience standpoint. Like for us, we've been in our field for like a decade, right? And so
before
you know, all these new things coming in, we had to go and relearn this stuff just as a, you know, an entry level person would have to go and relearn it. But now with the use of AI tools, we can learn it maybe just as fast as they can. But then based on our experience of being able to see around corners and all that good stuff, we can actually deliver, in my opinion, deliver much more reliable software than a junior developer can using the same AI tools.
Yeah. I think that's a great answer. And another thing to kind of piggyback off what you're saying, at least in my thought, is if you look at people that, you know, across the industry where layoffs are happening, I mean, look, I was impacted. You're going to see instances where people that are of such a high skill set might get laid off and I think it's not even a performance reason, right? Like I mean, we see all of these talented individuals that are probably getting let go in within Maine, right? But I mean, if they can't land a senior job or a job that was paying what they were making before, well, then they're probably going to take a step down, right? Because at the end of the day, I just need a job, right? I need to pay the bills. And so that's also going to take some of the less senior roles away from people that are looking to move up or even individuals that might be fresh in the industry, right? So I think that also creates a bottleneck for people that might have less experience.
Yeah, I also know that here's the other side of that coin too, which is more experienced people being reluctant to change. I think that has been true throughout this industry and this field is that people are kind of set in their ways. This is just people in general, right? People are typically set in their ways. There's this book called Don't Move My Cheese, right? Which is a pretty good book. And this is what we're doing. We're moving people's cheese. And so we've been here a while. And it's like, hey, come learn this new thing. And there's some resistance there, but that's dangerous. Because again, on the flip side, here's what I believe about entry-level engineers over experienced ones. They're more motivated. And that's not to say that, you know, the senior ones are not as not motivated, but I don't think they're stuck as motivated as entry-level, right? Like you coming in, you trying to prove yourself. And so and you're constantly trying to prove, and you're constantly trying to move up, right? More pay, higher role, higher title and all that good stuff. And so you're coming in with saying, hey, I can utilize AI and I can actually bridge or lessen the gap between myself and a senior, at least from a technical standpoint or productivity standpoint there. And if I'm a company, I'm looking at that, well, if I can get almost senior level work for less pay, and I get more motivated workers who are going to be more motivated to produce more, then I may lean more towards investing more into my juniors now, entry level, and things like that. So it's kind of two sides of a coin. I don't know, you know, obviously the data says what the data says. And I know the data says something about AI is cutting tasks and not wages, right? I think I had to dig more into the paper, but it's kind of like, yeah, sure. I would kind of maybe expect that, like, you start cutting people's pay, like, you know, people are going to riot, right? Like you come in and reduce their wage. Whatever it is in your state, like people are going to riot. Like, it's going to be a problem. But I think that depending on how they're gathering that data, it could be that it's not necessarily affecting wages directly, but the number of people employed in a field may not be there. And so if you're looking at it from a holistic standpoint, maybe it, in theory, it does cut wages or increases poverty.
And I won't go too much into like my 20-30 year prediction, because that's actually very doom and gloom from my side, so I'm not gonna go there. But I actually think long term we might see some of what you just mentioned, but we're gonna keep it positive. One thing I will hit on before we could go to the next bullet point, Hollywood, you mentioned something that was really good, which is junior engineers being more motivated. So I kind of want to go off script here and kind of give a little bit of maybe a story or just some reflection. So back when I was very early on in my career, and, you know, we were at RSI, and then, you know, you had moved on to now CDK. I was still there, and, you know, I was still like thinking about, like, oh, you know, what's going to be next for me? And then, you know, you sent me the job over on the Air Force Base. Like full transparency, like, I kind of fudged my resume a little bit, right? But it was all of the things I did behind the scenes, like studying, to be able to go into that interview and do what I did. I say that to say, as kind of a tip maybe for less experienced engineers, don't be afraid to, you know, play the game. Like, I'm not telling you guys to go full on lie on your resume. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is you might have to massage it in such a way that, you know, you can be noticed with people that might have a little bit more experience than you, right? Full transparency. When me and Hollywood were at RSI, this former company we worked at, for the first like 10 months of my time there, I didn't do any coding. I was working in like configuration management. But when I did my interview, they didn't know that. They thought I had been doing .NET the whole time, right? So I say that to say, like, look, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to put some things on there. And that's not to say that junior engineers aren't doing that. Like, I'm pretty sure a lot already are. But I'm just saying, like, really dig in and, like, put those things on there that maybe you haven't been doing. But if you do them on the side and you can learn them and you can speak to them in an interview, I would wholeheartedly, like, full steam ahead. Because if you're just showing up on a resume as, I don't have any experience, I haven't done anything with AI, like, I don't think you're going to have, you know, you're going to get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I think that one of the things we should really push for is all experience is good experience, right? So, like, if I were to ask mm-hmm. you, let's just say you did microservices on the side, but you never touched a microservice on your job. Does that mean you've never done microservices before? Like,
right.
You know, like, all experience should be good experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. Put it on there, guys. Put it on there. All right, sweet. Let's go to the kind of the next reflection point. How can this be slowed or prevented? Like, how, given this data and given this metric, right, that there's this job decline for younger individuals, what do you think could happen in Hollywood to help them out?
You talking about being phased out?
Yeah. So the 16% job decline for 22 to 25-year-olds. Like, how do we stop the bleed there? Or can we stop the bleed? What do you think?
Here's what I think. Overall, I think that jobs are going to be impacted, right? Not want to be doom and gloom, but overall jobs are going to be impacted. But to your point, how do you slow the bleed? It really depends on the answer is different depending on where you are in your career. So we're talking about just junior developers, are people new in career, trying to get in career. I think you have to be an AI first person now, rather than I hate to say fundamentals person, but I think it's true. So I know we talked about this in one of the previous episodes too, where I was, you know, trying to start this code camp into Codeverse and said it's coming, had the curriculum laid out and everything like that. Well, I didn't mm-hmm. start it, or I haven't started it yet. And part of the reason why I haven't started yet is because I need to change the curriculum. What I have learned and accepted is that if I start with the fundamentals first, I think that's great. Just to be clear, I think that's great. But I don't think I'm giving anyone a leg up by doing that. I think mm-hmm. it has to start with AI first. I think it has to, you start with AI and you work your way back to the fundamentals. I think of it like basketball. It's the opposite of basketball, where you kind of start with the fundamentals first, you know, before you put the ball mm-hmm. in the hoop, right? The footwork, mm-hmm. all the necessary skills that come with it. I think that just in this day and age, in the world that we live in and where we're headed to, you need to put the ball in the basket first, work on everything else later, right?
Unfortunately,
that's kind of where we're at. So if my answer for new in career would be start with AI first, and for people who are seasoned in their career, start moving towards AI. Start accepting the fact, almost look at it like this. I would say humble yourself. I had to humble myself too. Humble yourself and accept the fact that AI can just do the work that you tell it to do, probably a lot better than you can, unfortunately. We're going to get into some strategies later of how we should be utilizing it in our career. Shouldn't just be throw it over the fence. Again, we shouldn't do that. But I do think that you should really make AI your first step and work your way back from there.
Yeah, I would take it a step further, Hollywood. I'm not going to say take it a step further, but I would say, how far back do you need to go these days? I mean, think about it. So engineers coming into the industry now, or we won't say now because now AI is a thing, but we'll say 5-7 years ago, did people learn C? Did people learn about pointers? You know what I'm saying? Like, everything becomes more and more high level. And so I think that's just going to be another iteration of that. Probably the biggest iteration we've seen, right? Where now it's like, if you're AI first, like, how far back do you need to go? Do you really need to be learning, like, about linked lists, stacks, you know, algorithms, sorts?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great point. Right? Like, yeah. I think AI has redefined what high-level programming is.
Exactly. And I think, to your point about humbling yourself, I bet if there was a software enthusiast listening, they, like, my comment might heat them up a little bit, because they're like, you need to know the fundamentals, you know, you need to know data structures and algorithms. And I'm like, it's a new time, but I mean, yeah. I get it, you know, like, I get it, but it's a new time. Yeah, it's a new, like, time.
I think it comes from too, like, we had to fight through these classes. You should too.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that sounds similar. That sounds synonymous with people from previous generations, and they're like, oh, I had to go through blah, 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 blah. You should have to go through the same. It's like, what, do you want the next generation to struggle like we did? We should be trying to set them up for success. Like, they should be, we want them to go further than we did.
Yep.
Whatever. Okay, cool. Okay, so the next question I have, and this, I like this question. Do you think it's even worse for a person of color coming into the industry?
I think that anything that affects someone negatively, whatever the word is, or positively, I think whatever side of the fence you're on, I think what AI does is exasperates that problem, right? Yep. And so it amplifies it. So if it was already bad for people of color getting into the field, AI necessarily isn't going to make that better at face value. I want to say at face value, because I do have some instances where it actually can. And then same thing positively, right? Which is, if you're on the side of the field where, hey, you're doing things and whatever you're doing affects the company in positive ways, which is most people, right? Like, I mean, we're creating value for the company. AI should amplify that. But I think, going back to the people of color, yes, I do think in some ways it will be worse. But also, I actually do have some instances too where I believe that it would actually be better.
Yeah. Do you? I mean, if without, you know, going too far off the topic, like, could you share maybe an instance where you think it could help out for the better?
Yes. So, you know, the history of people of color in this country, right? We don't have to go through the whole timeline, right? We don't have much time.
Right.
But the playing field has never been even, right? There have been gaps that have been closed and are closing as we move further. I think it's just a natural progression, regardless of what's going on in the world today. I want to be very clear about that. I want to be very positive and hopeful about that too, right? Which is, hey, at the end of the day, we're moving towards a more positive and better world. There are always going to be hiccups. There are always going to be peaks and valleys, right? So just remember that. But the playing field hasn't always been even. And one thing I always believed about tech, this is before, you know, AI became a big deal and things like that, is that with tech was one of the best ways for people of color to help bridge the economic gap between those who have all the economy and those who do not. And the reason why I say that is because I believe this, I still believe this, is that if, let's say you were white, Trevor, and I was a black male, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're both going to apply for a coding job, same level. I mean, we got the same career, same knowledge, all this other stuff, right? But I can write the code better than you can, right? And I can speak to the concepts better than you can. If I'm the hiring manager and I'm looking at this, knowing that the industry moves as fast as it moves, knowing that I am held to the standard of delivering value, would I truly let my bias, or even racism, come into play to hire you, who can't speak to the terms, who can't show that they produced the work, or am I going to hire the person who actually can produce the work and produce the results? And I truly believe that, whether it's naively or not, I truly believe that that person is going to hire the person who can actually do the job, right? And so I say all that to say this. Now that AI has come into play, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't actually have to learn, to your point earlier, I don't have to learn a lot of the basic concepts or a lot of the basic fundamentals. If I have a good idea, and that idea is better than the next person's idea, I can go into AI and I have a good starting ground of building that out, right? I don't have to rely on some coding knowledge that I may not have. I don't even have to rely on having resources to go and pull from and say, hey, can you go and build this for me, right? Like the network of Black people's network, that is just our community. We don't have, if you go look at your family, how many software engineers can you find, right? How many people can they find, right? Where's if you go to like the 6 degree separation or things like that, right? Or LinkedIn and stuff like that. It's like, how far do you have to go to find somebody who would actually build towards your idea? It may be the greatest idea in the world. Can you find somebody? Do you have the resources? Do you have the financial resources and things like that? And so AI replaces a lot of that knowledge that used to be siloed or specialized now, because now I can know, at least to some degree, enough to get me started to help me move forward. And so that's where I think that it equals the playing field and gives us a better chance.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. One thing I did just think about when it comes to people of color, like, and I mean, this isn't for all of us, right? Like, I mean, definitely one of me. If there is a person of color that might be in like an underserved community, right? Like they don't have access to certain resources. I could see that being hard for them, even with AI, right? Because it's like, do they even have a laptop? You know, like, are they with their parents? Do their parents have a vehicle that they can get to a laptop or a computer? Like, I think that's where I do start to think like, oh man, like it could be tough, you know? And that's kind of why I thought of that laptop's idea. Cause I was like, hey, you know, whatever we could do to kind of bring our community up. But outside of that, I agree with everything you said.
But it starts somewhere, right? Like, it's not going to solve all the problems. And so, that's not what you were saying, right? But if it helps an additional, I should say, 10% of the Black community, well, that's the 10% who hopefully a large percentage of that is also going to give back and help the other 90%. And then that grows into that's how we make change.
I would agree with that. All right, cool. Sweet. All right, sir. Let's go down to our next little piece here. So, AI isn't eliminating all jobs in vulnerable areas. Translation jobs are actually growing. Not all automation means unemployment. Sometimes it just shifts the work. And one analogy I would say to that, Hollywood, just pausing here, is think about like Walmart or any Publix, where if you remember years ago, you had all of these checkout lanes and you had to have a cashier at the checkout lane and you had to stand in line and do your items through the lanes. Now, I mean, that still exists, you know, like you still have some of those lanes, but now it's like half and half or maybe 30-70, right? Where it's like far less lanes with cashiers actually checking you out. And now they're doing a lot of self-checkout. And I think the point there is like all those cashiers might not necessarily have been let go, but now their job has just shifted, right? Now, okay, cool. Now I can use you to go and stock the shelves. You know, now I can use you in the back. Like maybe, I don't know. I've never worked at a convenience store, so I don't want to sit here and try to like think about what they're doing, but I know there's a back area and there's probably work going on, right? So I can use you back there as opposed to you just have to stand up here and just check people out. To your point earlier, like, sure, there's probably been an impact, right? Like, I'm pretty sure over the years, like the grocery stores have probably said, hey, you know, we might not need 100 employees. Maybe we only need 75 or 80, right? So, I mean, I think there's going to be a little impact there, but it's not so drastic to the point where like everybody that was a cashier gets let go. And furthermore, I think that goes to your point of like humbling yourself and really trying to dig in and learn those other skill sets, right? If I was a cashier and I saw the onset of self-checkout, I'm immediately like, what can I do to get to a point where I'm doing other things around the store? Because that's going to show my value to where they keep me around.
Yep. Yep.
Sweet. Okay. There's an article that was produced by science.org that basically cautions against overgeneralizing AI doom. So basically, like we shouldn't get so caught up in like it's the end of the world, AI, blah blah blah. Like I said, I do have thoughts on the next like 2-3 decades, but I'm not gonna go there. But where I wanna go here, Hollywood, is to some additional of reflection around how AI has helped you versus when has it ever felt threatening to you? And kind of like the contrast and how you felt through that, you know, kind of talking through, you talked about how you had to humble yourself. Like, were you initially like in a phase of like feeling threatened and then kind of crossing over and feeling like, wow, this is actually more helpful than hurtful? Like, what was that experience like for you kind of getting more and more experience with it?
Yeah. So, a lot of it's ego. It was, hey, like I'm pretty good at what I do. At least I think I am. Like I produce a lot of code in a short period of time. Yep. So just the thought of having to pause, create a prompt, get code, take it out, put it in, and run it seemed a lot slower to me than actually doing it. In reality, obviously not the case. But that's just how it felt. And not to mention when I was working on an app one time, I was doing some side stuff and I can't remember exactly the problem I was asking to solve, but it had something to do with like timers and stuff like that. And I wouldn't even use AI intentionally. I was actually just using Google to see like, hey, I was trying to search something about this library and it actually printed out this code. And I was like,
the AI overview.
I never done this before, right? So let me go take this code. I'm looking at the code now. Before I paste it in, I'm looking at it. Remember, I always say this, is that I don't try to be the smartest in the room, I just try to be the most informed. I had already read the documentation of this library and everything. I knew what it could do and what it couldn't do. And I knew how to use hooks and like React and stuff like that. So I'm like, hey, this is not how this works. So the code that it put out, I'm looking at it, I'm just like, there's no way that this works. I know it doesn't work. It shouldn't work that way. I was like, you know, for the sake of it, let me copy and paste it and put it in. So I did. And of course, it did not work. Right. So already there, my purview of that was just like, my experience wasn't that great. Like, hey, look, I'm pretty sure I can do this better. But then as I'm kind of researching, writing code and using AI tools to write code. And I just tried it one day. So let me just try it. And I heard this thing called vibe coding. One of my coworkers, Stacy, she had asked me, have I heard of vibe coding before? And I was like, no, I never heard of it. So I go and I start reading into it. And I was like, well, let me try it, 'cause I can't speak to something if I ain't tried it, right? Or I hadn't read into it. So I go and I try it. And not that my experience was great, but the experience of just seeing how much code AI could output, even though I still had to go in and correct it and reorganize some stuff and things like that, that's a lot easier and took a lot less time than if I had to produce all this myself. And I started doing that and I started learning more and I'm like, well, what are my weaknesses? All right. I know my weaknesses in code. CSS, yeah, that's for the birds for me. HTML, like, you know, that's for the birds. Database stuff, again, I should not be touching database.
Okay, but Tailwind though, Hollywood. If you're doing, I mean, to me, Tailwind makes CSS a lot more like,
it makes it more palatable. Yeah, I'll give it to you. but again, do I want to do it though? No, I don't want to do it.
Fair.
And there are a lot of things, but Tailwind is just kind of shorthand. I won't say just shorthand, but it's shorthand for like full CSS, right? And there's a lot of things in CSS I don't understand, nor do I want to understand. And so
yep.
all the things I'm not good at, I'm like, well, let me use AI to enrich and enhance what I don't know very well. I can write a SQL query all day. Doesn't mean it's going to be good. Doesn't mean it's going to be efficient. I can guarantee you it probably won't be, right? So I'm going to use AI to do that. And then just kind of start using it to fill in the gaps of my knowledge, or where I fall short at is when I really, really, really start learning that, hey, this tool is actually to my advantage. And the last point I will make is that I think I found a way to really, really accelerate my learnings and understanding. And so, again, I consider myself good at what I do. I feel like I write great code. I go and study, and I read the documentation and things like that. And I still do that. I still will write code by hand. But after I do that, I use my AI tools as my pair programming partner, my code reviewer, because now it's going to look at my code and say, hey, see what you're doing here. You can do this better. Here's a better way to do it. Here's why is a better way to do it. I'm actually learning as I go. And so it just getting more eyes on the edge cases and being able to look around corners and know what to expect, maybe going forward in different technologies. I think it's been great.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So I'll kind of reflect on kind of like my experience, and I'll say for like full transparency, like I don't even know if I'm 100% bought in, but I definitely think I'm over the hump. I was similar to you, like very, you know, ego driven and thinking like, I had the same thought as you, Hollywood, where I was like, I feel like this is going to take longer to prompt it, get all the code and get it all organized. I was like, man, this is a hot mess. I'd rather just write it myself, you know? And the first time that I started using AI was when I was back in my IC role at that temporary job I was telling you about. And I ran into this infinite scroll issue. And I'm not gonna lie, like I didn't know how to fix it. And so I just popped open and I was like, you know what, let me hit up ChatGPT and just see like if it can walk me through this. So I treated it as a pair programmer, right? So I'm literally sitting there like just almost like I'm talking to a human, and I'm just like, hey, I'm having this issue, blah blah blah. I'm like, these are the details. It's like, oh yeah, what about this? What about, and eventually like we arrived at something that worked, right? And that was kind of my first like whoa moment. That's when I was like, okay, yeah, I think this stuff is powerful, you know. Yo. Granted, I was still for the most part writing code by hand. And I would say even to this day, like I still think the majority of the code I write is by hand. But the real moment when I really realized like, wow, like you can literally prompt your way through a whole app is when I was working on this side project. This is the thing I was still talk to you about with Lance, and we were using Cursor, and we were all on a call, and we were like, man, we want it to look just like this other website that this large company owned. And so Lance was like, he's like, bro, I'm gonna just prompt it until I wanted to look like this website. And I'm sitting there in my mind, I'm like, I don't think that's gonna work, but let's look at it anyway. Hollywood, this man prompted Cursor made it look just like that website. And then we subsequently prompted it and said, all right, cool, we want a red theme based on this hex code. And it literally themed the entire website. And I'm talking about it has interactions. It's got like hover states. It's got, I was like shocked. Like I was sitting there just like, you know, so I think at that moment, that's when I was like, yeah, this stuff is the real deal, you know? I think the key is obviously like with us having tech backgrounds, like we can kind of guide it, right? Because I've also seen instances where if you don't give it that guidance, it's going to do all kinds of stuff, right? Like it becomes a security risk. You have secrets like directly in your code. You have spaghetti code. And so I that's where I'm like, okay, how far can a non-technical person get building out an application before it gets to a point of unmaintainable, right? Because at that temp job I was telling you about, the project I was on where I was actually using ChatGPT, the client brought that code base to us and said, we built this out with AI and now it's a big mess. We don't know. We're lost. We're going to have to pay you guys a bunch of money so you guys can help us untangle this mess. So can you think of a point where a non-technical person either has to bring in a technical person, or at what point do they say, hey, I've gotten it to this point. I know I need help. Or maybe I definitely think over the years, AI will get to a point where it will solve for that, but we're not there yet. So like, given that, like, what would you say to a non-technical person right now that's trying to build out their own application?
Well, what would I say to them?
Like, at what point do you think they need to bring in a technical person, or do you think they need to bring in a technical person at all?
Oh, no. They'll need to bring in a technical person. But here's where I think they get the advantage, right? Or we get the advantage, really, which is I don't have to bring one in at the start, because what happens is, you know, everybody has a great idea, right? Like, I'm pretty sure you've been approached multiple times. Say, I got this great idea. We can build this, right? And, you know, this universal we here, right? Because, you know, we're not going to be writing the code. We're not going to be spending our late nights trying to put in the work while we got a job to go to the next morning, right? So the universal
week.
But what it allows them to do now is they can start creating prototypes, and potentially if they're part of this idea should be to sell it again, like they can go and they can start selling this idea, maybe sell a prototype of it, generate funding before they ever, you know, out of pocket big money. And then or are making promises that they can't fulfill, right? Oh man, it's going to make such and such money. I give you X percent of it. Well, you know, 90% of nothing is still nothing, right? So if it's from that standpoint, they don't have to do that. They can go ahead and sell it and kind of get investors into it, get the money, get the capital. And then if it were me, I'm giving all my strategy right now. If it were me, I would take that money, that investment capital, and I would invest in those AI tools and a person to use them, give that technical person their money up front. And then try to make my money off the product in the back end, if I truly believe it's a great idea, right? Because if you come into somebody with a great idea, you should believe that it's a great idea. But that's how I would do it. I would say, okay, I can remove the technical person initially. You need to go ahead and focus on getting the prototype out there, get my funding out there, get some capital in there, and then using that capital to then get the technical person to accelerate with the whole prototype into a production ready application. Hopefully it starts making money. And again, get my money all on the back end.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think the value here is being able to, like you said, build that prototype or that MVP, get it productionalized. And then from there, like, then you can bring in like a technical person, right? And I think even, I don't know the time span, but I definitely think at some point over the next few years, maybe even sooner, AI will get to a point where, honestly, man, like it might not even require that, honestly. The last question I have for you is vibe coding. So I've heard the term, I see it all over LinkedIn. So is vibe coding like are we vibe coding if is it vibe coding if I use AI but then I go and change the code myself, or is vibe coding like I completely use prompts, I don't touch the code at all? Or am I being way too granular about it?
I think you're giving too much credit to whoever came up with the term vibe coding. I'm pretty sure that the definition is not solidified anywhere, right? But my general idea of it is that you are using AI tools to completely generate a working application.
Cool. I was just curious. Sweet. All right. So let's move to the next section, human AI collaboration. So there's a quote from UC Santa Barbara's Matt Bean on augmentable work, jobs where humans manage output, and discussing real world examples, which we kind of already did, vibe coding, which is something that they talked about. AI can crank out boilerplate, but humans still need to architect and review. So that's kind of going back to what me and Hollywood discussed, which is, hey, you know, a non-technical person, you can get an MVP out there. You can even get some revenue. But at some point, at least with the current state of AI, if you don't want to run into, you know, security risks or just having a big ball of mud down the road that you just can't even change, it might be best at some point to bring in a technical person. Hollywood, you got any other thoughts on human AI collaboration? I think we hit on that pretty well, but anything else?
No, again, my advice is just wherever you are in your career, really, really take the time to understand how you can use these tools to maximize your work. I can't stress enough how important it's going to be able to be AI literate. Tech literacy was a big thing. And all these studies, I think when you look up these studies, you can always find something that supports your viewpoint, whether it's, hey, you know, it's not all doom and gloom with AI, and then you support another viewpoint. It's all, it is doom and gloom, right? Think back to when the internet was created. There were a lot of articles out there that talk about, hey, you know, internet is just a fade, a fad. It's just a phase that you'll go through. And it won't be as big as it is now. And clearly they were wrong, right? The best thing I can tell you is that, hey, at least become AI literate, because if it is a fad and it does phase away, well, you lost nothing, right? But if it's not and it's here to be around for a very long time, then you've gained a lot.
I think that's a great kind of tip and just great advice. What would you say? How can I frame this question? Would your advice or what would your messaging change at all if you were talking to a professional of color? So moving away, I know earlier we were talking more about professionals that were either junior or just entering the industry. What about maybe for professionals of color that are already in the industry, but maybe they don't have kind of the AI literacy? Would your messaging change at all for them? Would you say anything? Do you think that maybe they feel like, hey, you know, is my job even more a threat with me being a person of color?
I don't think my messaging would change. I do think this, though. I think that being a person of color, we're not a monolith. Let me say this before I get into this whole spiel. We're not a monolith, right? But I think I have a general or a good idea of how we feel as people of color who are in the field and who have gotten to where we are today, right? We feel a level of accomplishment. I think the hurdle was pretty high, depending on, you know, your circumstances, your environment. And this has nothing to do with other races, right? It's just us, right? Like our communities. We know how our communities are, right? And the messaging that is very, very prominent in our community. So just overcoming that negativity and all that stuff. And you get to a place where you can be like, hey, I made it. I'm in the field. I got my job. I'm good. That's a terrible place to be at. And so my messaging would change. It would be the same, but I would really, really want to stress, hey, don't ever think you're good. I think that is a terrible place to be at mentally. Like you need to be in a place where it's like, hey, any given day I can be replaced. And so I'm going to work very hard for that to be a very difficult decision, if it ever comes down to that.
I think that is amazing advice. And I would say, as someone that has gone through a layoff, I already felt in the past like, oh, you're not gonna be able to outwork me. But now it's like that times like 10, right? Because I'm like, oh no. Nah. I'm like, now. Because now you have a monkey on your shoulder, right? Like, I mean, if for those out there, if you're like me in Hollywood, like, we're very, like, prideful, you're going to have a monkey on your shoulder, right? And you're like, oh, man, nah, like, I can't go out like that, you know? Now it's to the point where, like, it's like, nah, I'm eating everybody's lunch. You know what I'm saying? So I'll completely aligned with you on that. All right, so that's it. That's it, guys. I do want to leave us with some closing points here. And remember, I think we had a great discussion, but I do want us to just keep it positive. So I will say this. Number one, AI is eliminating some jobs, especially entry-level ones, but also opening new doors for experienced workers. Bullet point number two, reassure everyone, it's not all doom. Collaboration with AI could be the future of work. Number three, call to action. Stay adaptable, embrace AI, and invest in skills that either use AI or AI can't replace. Like, Hollywood, maybe different trades, right? Maybe things that require physical labor, if you're open to that, right? And if you're a professional of color, lean into mentorship and networking. And also, like Hollywood said, never become complacent. Hollywood, you got anything else you want to add to that?
No, hey, look, y'all, I know that the world right now is a very interesting place, to say the least, right? And especially with AI, the age of information that we're in, and the age of misinformation that we're in. Just, you know, remember your foundations, and focus on controlling what you can control, and let everything else fall into place.
Facts. All right, guys, another episode of Code Switch Podcast. We out of here. I've seen the powerful fall when the people work together as one. I need you to live or let die. Hold your head high. I'm by your side till it's one.